One thing that's been surprising for Daniel is how hard it is to actually get people to follow U+1. Last time I was at Box of Rain, I saw Daniel standing on a stool lit from below by a camping lantern as a photographer squatted beneath him and snapped pictures of his "Why do you keep leaving dishes?" face, which turned out to be a mixture of shock, disappointment, and fury. It's extra frustrating for him because his house was meant to be the ideal community. Our producer, Matt Harnack, who lives with Daniel, did this next story to answer the question of what went wrong.
Last year, after watching one too many of those doom and gloom documentaries, I took it upon myself to limit my own resource consumption and to make a movie about it. I got rid of my car and I tried to eat mostly a local vegetarian diet. We even turned down the heat so low that Zuzanna and I could see our breath in the mornings. I just couldn't stand the idea that I was part of the 5% of the world's population using 25% of its resources. I got so obsessed with minimizing my environmental footprint that Zeus begged me to go get some professional help. Linda Bazell-Saltzman, a therapist who specializes in eco-anxiety, gave me this advice.
Find out what the best gifts are that you have, and then focus those gifts on a part of the solution, where you're building the solution. But don't try and solve the whole problem. You're not going to be perfect in every sector of your life. What I would really advise is not to tackle these issues by yourself. They're so much bigger than any one person that really the only solutions are community solutions. So what I would probably suggest is that you either form a group or join a group of people who also are involved in some way.
Zuzanna and I moved in together last spring to try to make Box of Rain just that kind of group. How did the idea for making community around sustainability happen?
I realized from working with you on the Fossil Fuel Free film last year that community was a really important part of the sustainability equation. I was partially inspired by Franklin's Tower last year, partially inspired by just stories of hippie communes. It was a mix of things. And then sort of this visceral feeling of feeling alone, which was just sort of the experience of feeling lonely in trying to change my life.
When I was visiting you, I would get a lot of energy from being part of this community. It meant a lot to me to go over to Franklin's Tower and see them eating locally while I was trying to eat locally myself. I felt like, you know, finally, I'm not alone. And I definitely think that the vision that they were successful at producing over at Franklin's Tower is something I wanted to emulate here.
Franklin's Tower was Phil Narodick, Daniel Steinbach version 2.0 community. You know, they had had Uncle John's, which was a really great community, but I think from the stories I've heard wasn't quite as unified and gelled together as then the Franklin's Tower community was the year afterward.
But shouldn't this be like version 3.0 and be even more successful?
Well, maybe I screwed up somewhere.
Phil, who started the Franklin's Tower community with Daniel a few years ago, recently moved up to the city, but still plays a huge role in this community. I got a chance to interview him one morning after he'd stayed up all night studying for a midterm.
Good morning, Phil. How you doing? Are you up yet?
Can I have, like, 5 minutes?
Yeah, I can make you some coffee, too, if that would be helpful.
That would be absolutely wonderful. I'm a little bit of a disaster right now.
That's perfect.
Can you make it a big cup?
Sure thing. At what point did you get involved with the Dead Houses?
I actually hardly ever went to the Dead Houses before senior year. The end of my junior year, I decided I really didn't want to live on campus anymore. I was sick of the place. I was sick of the fact that Stanford was graduating big babies who had never cleaned or cooked or done anything for themselves. So, like the community organizer that I am, if you will, I went to all my friends and I strong-armed them into moving off campus with me. We put together a 13-person group and moved into Uncle John's band and China Cat Sunflower our senior year. In my opinion, the community really started last year. And it was interesting because I was reading this article on community building, and I learned that one of the best things for the formation of group identity and community historically has been having something for the group to hate. So I decided to take all the dead houses that we knew and create a list called Dead Houses That Don't Suck at Stanford. Dead Houses That Don't Suck at list.stanford.edu. And it started with like our dead house and another dead house and a couple other people. And then slowly like girlfriends got added, best friends, and people from Synergy, and the list just kept ballooning until it was, I don't know, 50 people, and inevitably the people in the dead houses that did suck found out about it, and the ones we knew got added to the list as well. And it was awesome because it just turned into this utility for community organizing.
So you basically had an invisible enemy that was like your neighbor.
Fuck yeah. and you know, and there were some drunken, like, heated arguments about what dead houses sucked and what dead houses didn't. But people started inviting all the other people on the list to their parties at the dead houses, to their dinners, and we just started getting together all the time. Like, multiple times a week, dead houses plus their friends. And it rocked. It was really good. In fact, I would say that the Franklin's Tower community that I built, that was built while I was there, I'm not taking credit for it, was maybe like the strongest community that I've ever been a part of. I'm no longer part of the dead houses. I just kind of crash here when I don't have anywhere else to go. But I hear that, if anything, it's even stronger this year. That now, you know, the dead houses aren't divided into those that suck and those that don't, but one big dead house collective that gets together once a week to have potlucks, which is great.
Well, we're working on it, but you guys set the bar pretty high. So can you maybe explain what the plan / vision of your community, the Franklin's Tower community, and the Dead Houses That Don't Suck community?
That's really interesting. You know, at the risk of, like, sounding cheesy, the Franklin's Tower community was kind of a post-apocalyptic utopia, if you will. I mean, the shit was crazy. Like, all of our friends lived down the block, so we'd, like, walk over there at 3 a.m. without shoes on. We would, like, forage for our food a little bit. You know, we'd bike to the farmer's market. We'd jack as much free food as we could from campus when events were done. I don't know. It was just great. Like, there were always people crashing at Franklin's Tower. We were always, like, helping out as this quasi-self-sufficient community.
So here's what I think of as the difference, and sort of one of the key things that was actually a driving factor in how I was looking for people for the house. I didn't want all hippies. I didn't want everyone to be the same. I didn't want us all to come from the same background. And I was really looking for people who were interested in sustainability but wanted to do it in different ways. And I think that now I sometimes lose track of the fact that that was, like, one of my goals.
I just wanted to live with a bunch of hippies.
Yeah, but I think that's not a good way to really start to understand sustainability. I think that the sustainability issue is going to take community, but it's going to take the coming together of many different kinds of communities, which are made up of very different folk with different sort of ideologies and worldviews.
When Zeus put the house together, she invited Weston McBride and Matt Coleman, two Stanford grads who were used to a different type of community, the Brotherhood of Sigma Nu.
So my name is Matt Coleman. I'm a graduate student at Stanford. Right now I'm working on my bike, which is my, like, other mode of transport. And I was kind of mean to her yesterday. I rode her in the rain.
Earlier in the experience, I know that you were having some reservations, and you were basically unhappy with the way things were going.
Yeah. Okay, so let's... I think I'll... Sorry, I have to process the question and think about how I'd tackle it. So I first want to talk about, in terms of expectations, it was really, I said this earlier, but it's important that I thought there was going to be a ruler of the house, and there wasn't. What I didn't realize, so I'm not an idealist. I am a cynical pragmatist all the way to the core. It's sad, but true. So living in a house with a lot of idealists, and especially idealists who I thought were in charge of me, I worried that I would cross them by not being fully on board with the direction of the rest of the house, and that by doing so, I would be kicked out of this housing that I am, you know, I'm here without a lease, I'm like tenuously. I didn't know my status in the house, and I was kind of new to the community and very worried about getting kicked out, losing the roof over my head because of some argument I had with someone. And I think that's it. So how that made me feel was that just constantly on my guard, always afraid of being out in the street the next day, and trying just to not talk to anyone, just to kind of withdraw from the community to avoid any interaction that could possibly be bad. But over time, I think we work things out. And I think the two kind of key methods for doing that were, one, understanding different styles of conflict resolution. My friends in Box are of the, I don't want to say Quaker hippie variety, but they adopt a lot of Quaker methods for dealing with conflict, which for someone who's used to boxing it out, maybe doesn't make as much sense. But they're good methods. I like them. It just took me a while to warm up to them and to not be suspicious of them.
What kind of things do you imagine for this community in the future? Mm-hmm. And how do you see yourself in it?
I don't think I'm as ambitious as anyone else in the house. So what I imagine for the community is more or less it's a roof over my head, a place to live, people that are nice to hang out with, sometimes shared food, but I'm not a vegan, so every now and then I have to make some meat, and that's I don't maybe eat as many meals with the house as I could because of that. But I want us all to be friends, I think, is what I really want. I moved here mostly because it's better than living by yourself or with someone else. And I think that still holds true as a basic, like, the basis for community housing is just being with other people. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I think.
I think that when you take a moral stance, when you say that somebody who knows about the issues and understands the impact of the actions they take chooses to ignore that, if you think of that as a moral issue, you become judgmental. So I have been a judgmental, environmentally minded person. And you also become judged. Because people don't want their lifestyles to change. I think there's this fierce need to hold on to the lifestyle they've built for themselves, which makes sense. You don't want everything that you've worked towards or everything that you've been taught to be undermined.
But that totally undermines the idea of change.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But I had this hope that you could bring together a lot of different people from different walks of life, with different sort of charismatic elements in their personalities and different ways of interacting, different histories, and different reasons to be interested in sustainability. My biggest dream for the house was that it would be a home for conversation, that we would get together, have house meetings, and brainstorm. And so my dream was that we all had something we were passionate about and that we wanted to change about our community, about our house, and that each of us would take on a different aspect of living in this house sustainably, and that it would be an ongoing, evolving, creative process.
My vision of the house initially was that by living communally, you inherently use fewer resources, and the work that you put in gets multiplied times 8, and by 8 people all pulling their weight, plus a little bit more, you create a massive amount of abundance, and that allows you to do more than you could ever do on your own. Can you tell me about the reality of what's happened in this community?
The reality is, I think we haven't had a house meeting in 3 weeks, and we haven't, I think we all have different levels of commitment and different expectations of what the community should provide and what we should provide to the community. I don't know what this is supposed to be other than, I think I came to it with like this big idea of this big word of sustainability. But sustainability means so many different things. It can mean not producing waste, using energy efficient appliances, not consuming or consuming in a smart way. It can mean rebuilding. It can mean gardening. Maybe it needs policy. Maybe it means everybody in the world has to change with their personal habits. It's a huge grab bag of ideas. And I think that my intention was that everyone came in with their own definition of sustainability. And I'm not sure that we all did.
I feel like the community could be a lot more. And I do get disheartened when people are just not that into it. My hope for the future is that we get more of the house to buy in to the idea of eating communally, of working together in the garden, of cleaning together. And by doing that, we create that abundance.